You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
If you're a sports fan, then you know this dynamic. I've watched a lot of college football yesterday, so it's kind of on my mind. You know how a new coach or a new administration can radically change a program really quickly, especially at the college level. Even at the pro level, a new system can take a team that was just mediocre to being contenders really fast. And at the same time, there are certain franchises, and you know them if you're a sports fan, that just seem like they're never going to get any better. It doesn't matter how many different players they bring in or how many changes they make to the system. As long as they have the same owner or the same coach, that program is always going to be doomed. And the same dynamic is true in business as well. You have companies that doesn't matter how great their product is, as long as that guy's in charge, the culture is going to be toxic, it's not going to be profitable, it's only a matter of time until it goes away. And at the same time, you have average companies. You know, the product is average, but the culture is so good because the leadership is so good. And people love working there and they make it because of that. You understand that dynamic. It plays out in homes and businesses, teams of all different kinds. Well, the reason I say that is because I think Romans 6 is going to tap into this desire that we all have to change. And one of the problems that we're going to see is that we're all kind of under this system that makes change really, really hard. Paul, throughout Romans, calls it the system of being under the law. And even when we're sort of like removed from that system, we have all these habits that we built up while we were in that system, and that becomes our default approach to change. And so all of us, though we all have these areas of our life that we desperately want to change, we all sort of default to some kind of system that makes change really hard. And Paul calls that under the law. And at the end of the text that we looked at last week, Paul makes this bold declaration that we're no longer under the law, but we're under grace. And Paul has been dealing with this tension throughout this book, this tension between law and grace. The Jews that Paul's writing to lived under the law. God gave them the law. It was precious to them. It itself is a very good thing. The problem, as Paul points out in chapter 2 of Romans, is that they sort of prided themselves on having the law. And Paul says, no, it's not the having of the law that matters. It's the doing of the law that matters, if you're a Seinfeld fan. It's not the taking of the reservation that matters. It's holding the reservation that matters. And further than that, because there were some Jews who viewed themselves as being doers of the law, Paul says, no, you've misunderstood what I mean by doing the law. See, they had reduced it to sort of external conformity to the law. It was all about the appearance of things. And Paul, later in chapter 2, says, no. Being a Jew is not a matter of being one outwardly, but it's an inward matter. It's an issue of the heart. And obeying the law is not about doing the things externally so people can see you're a good law keeper. It's an issue of the heart. It's by the Spirit. And the person who obeys the law truly, he's not looking for credit from men. He gets his praise from God. And that's the part that kind of gets us. It's the not looking for praise from men, but from God. Here's a picture of a true lawkeeper. And so the law is good, Paul says, but the problem with the law is that it can't change us. It can sort of show us what change will look like, but it can't bring it about. Dallas Willard said it this way. He said, the law is always the course of righteousness, but never the source of righteousness. And this is what Paul says in Romans 3. He says, by works of the law, no human being will be justified, since through the law comes the knowledge of sin. You see, the purpose of the law is not to make us righteous, it's to expose our unrighteousness. And this is what they miss. This is what we miss. If you ever felt like no matter how hard you try, it's not good enough for God or for somebody else in your life. If you've ever had that haunting sense, and I think you have, that whatever you're chasing, whatever you're trying to attain or achieve or get a hold of in this life, sometimes you get that haunting sense that when you get it, it's somehow not going to be enough. If you've ever come to that place in your life like I have where you realize, I have been working so hard. I have given everything I've got to change this issue or this area in my life, and it just doesn't seem to be working. All of those facets are descriptions of what it means to live under the law. The law shows you what life should be like, but it can't produce that in your life. The righteousness we want is not earned through obedience, but it's received by faith. That's the point of the first part of Romans. To everyone who believes in Jesus, God gives them a new status, and righteous. And he gives us a new footing in the world. Romans 5:2 says that we now stand in grace. That's our place in this world. That's the air we breathe, is grace, not law. This is the primary concern of Romans 1 through 5. Now, in Romans 1 through 6, there's a shift that's happening. In 1 through 5, righteousness is talked about as kind of a legal standing. And in 6 through 8, it's not just legal, it's living. It's actual. So in Romans 1 through 5, we find out we're adopted into the family of God. We were orphans, but now we're adopted into God's family. Things have changed. Primarily, our status has changed. We're in God's household now. But we haven't changed all that much, have we? Like, I'm still the same. I mean, I'm not an orphan anymore, but I still have orphan tendencies, right? All the habits and vices and preferences that I developed as an orphan, they're still part of me, even though I've been shifted over now legally into God's family. And for the practical-minded people among you, well, this is the thing that has sort of bothered you up to this point in Romans. I mean, if you're practical-minded, you're like, yeah, that's great. Counted as righteous is cool. I get it. I love it. But I have an actual life I'm trying to live here. I need actual righteousness, not just credited righteousness. And Romans 6 through 8 is for you, because you want things to really change in your life now. And so the question you have, and the question we all have deep down somewhere, is this. Can God change us now? Is the gospel and is salvation and is Christianity really just about the next life? Is it a ticket to heaven? Or is it about this life? Is God just sort of like putting us on hold till we get there? Or does he want to do something right now in our lives? This is the shift that's happening in Romans 5 through 8. And as Paul is wrapping up his teaching on justification by faith, sort of what it means to be made right with God legally, two questions come up in Romans 6. This is sort of the Q&A period in Paul's sermon. The first question we looked at last week is essentially this. They ask the question, okay, so if I can't outrun grace, in other words, the more I sin, the more profoundly I experience grace, well then, shouldn't we just like keep sinning? Have you ever had that experience where like, it's in the wake of sin that you have this deep, profound experience of God's grace? And have you ever been tempted to use that as a justification to go on sinning? Oh, I'm going to get more grace like this. I've done that. The second question that comes up is in verse 15. You heard it read today. And it's essentially this. If we're not under law anymore, like if I don't stand to lose anything by not keeping the law, then doesn't that just give me permission to go on sinning, do whatever I want? I mean, God forgives us anyway. And what's at the heart of both of these questions is the same issue, and that is, again, is the gospel a ticket to heaven, or does God transform us now? Does the gospel make a difference now? And Paul's answer, in short, to this question is this, and this is what we're going to see in Romans 6, 7, and 8. Sort of the big heading of it would be, the same grace that justifies you, that makes you right with God, that gives you a new status and standing with God, is the same grace that sanctifies you, that changes you actually here and now. Salvation is not a destination. It's a trajectory. Yes, God is going to complete his work in you. You are going to stand before him face to face, whole and complete. But he is right now at work in you to make you the kind of person that you will forever be. Eternal life is not disconnected from this life. It's now. Eternity, as Willard says, is now in flight. You have been saved. You are being saved. And you will be saved. So, I just wanted to say all that because that's the conviction you've got to have to get into Romans 6. You've got to get settled deep in your soul, in your gut, that God will complete what he has begun in you, that he is at work right now. That's his purpose. And so with that before us, Paul now wants us to give us some understanding of how that works. It's there, it's real, it's present right now, it's acting on you, but how? How does it work? And so I'm just going to give us three things about sanctification by grace, and really want to do this just as a sort of introduction to the topic. So I won't be able to say everything that I want to say that is in this text. That's going to unfold over the next few weeks as we work our way through this section. And that is either just a wise plan or a way to get you to come back. And maybe those are the same thing. Maybe those are the same thing. All right. Three things about sanctification by grace. First, there's an underlying principle we've got to understand. And second, you need to understand that grace is a power. It's not a commodity or something like that. It's a power that acts on you. And third, you need to understand that sanctification is a process. And it involves certain things, which we'll get to in just a second. So first, a principle, the principle that's at play. Verse 16, look at it in your text. We're just going to walk through this part of Romans 6. They've asked the question, should we just go on sinning? And Paul says, no way, man. Do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient slaves, you're slaves of the one whom you obey, either of sin, which leads to death, or of obedience, which leads to righteousness? And so here's the principle. This is like a universal scientific law. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. It just is. It's always working. It's like gravity. The principle is this. Everyone is a slave to something. We all worship something. You can say whatever you want about what you believe and whatever doctrine you hold to. It doesn't matter. The true test of what you worship is what you give yourself to, what desires that you obey. We simply cannot be neutral because the principle is that everyone is a slave to something. We were made to be a slave to God, to live unto God with our whole being, but sin clouded that. Sin made us, in some effect, push God to the margins of our lives. And when we did that because it made us feel like we were in control. See, but that's not true according to this principle. You're never in control. You're always a slave to something. But having pushed God to the sides and kind of put ourselves in the center, something has to rise to the top of our affections. In other words, we're just wired that in a way that something has to capture our imagination. Something has to be out before us in which we're driven to. Something has to have our hopes and our dreams. And if it's not God, it's something else. And if you want to know what that something else is, just look at what you give yourself to. An easy example, money. If you give yourself to money, in other words, if you overwork and undergive, if you cheat and lie to make a buck, if most of the primary factor in your decision-making has to do with the financial benefit that you get, if the highs and the lows of your life are tied to getting or losing money, then you have given yourself over to money. You're enslaved to it in some way. You've become its obedient slave. That's what Paul's trying to say. Don't you see that? Don't you see this principle at work in just the everyday stuff? We're all slaves to something. There are so many things that we give ourselves to. You could just run a list through. We talk about this list often. Pleasure, comfort, power, approval, image, and so on. You get that. You can obey your desires for all those things. But here's the thing I want to talk about related to this text is that how do we trace those things out in our lives? Right? I think most of you are probably pretty settled that, yeah, I have a tendency to like chase that instead of God. But then the question becomes, in sanctification and real changes, well, how do I get to the root of that? How do I trace out what's going on? And there's lots of ways to do that. I want to give you one question. Here it is. What are you trying to control? In other words, if you want to see, okay, what is it I'm giving myself to, ask the question, what am I trying to control? Because that leads you down the right path of figuring that out. And so if it's your schedule, like if you're the kind of person who's sort of zealously protects and controls your schedule so that nobody or nothing can get in, can interrupt your plans. What is it you're trying to get by controlling your schedule like that? That's probably what you serve. Could be outcomes. If you're the kind of person who's always manipulating people and circumstances so that people will make the decisions that you want them to make, you're always shading things to kind of get to where you want to get, you have to ask yourself, what kind of life do I want that causes me to try to control things like that? Could be what people think of you. So if you're always, you know, explaining yourself, you're always defending yourself, or maybe you're often withholding how you think or feel in order to spin perception and sort of keep the image or the reputation out there that you want. What is it you're trying to get by controlling what people think of you? That's likely your God, your functional God anyway. For some of you, it's food. In other words, do you exert or try to exert control over food in some way? Meaning, you resort to it, you abuse it, you worry about it. You have to ask yourself, why do I treat food this way? What am I trying to control? Because that leads you to what God you're serving. It's when we feel like we've lost control in one of these areas or in some area, that is when all the negative emotions come to the surface. Your struggle with fear and anxiety and worry and pride even and anger, that's all connected to a sense usually of feeling like you're out of control or something's out of control. And that is connected to not understanding this principle, which is you're never in control. You're always enslaved to something. God is the only one in control. That's what Paul says here. You're slaves either of sin, which leads to death, or of obedience, which leads to righteousness. All right, here's what Paul's saying. Everybody obeys something, and whatever that thing is, it's your spiritual master. No one's free. You might think you're free, but you're not. That's the deceptiveness of sin. And until you give up on being in control, you're never going to experience the kind of change you want in your life. Most of us are trying to change from the outside in. We're trying to control all the external factors in our lives, hoping it will produce some internal change in us. And it just can't. And until you kind of bring your life under the reality of this principle, you'll never experience the kind of change you want. To be under grace means to be under its rule. You used to be under the rule of sin, and now you're under a new regime, the reign of grace. So, to ask the question, oh, well, since I'm under grace, should I just give myself to sin? That very question misunderstands the whole principle that underlies sanctification. It misunderstands what grace is and how it changes us. We are made in the image of God. One person a long time ago, I can't remember who they were, said it this way. We tend to think of ourselves as costume jewelry. You know, like God saves us and makes us look good on the outside, but really he's just kind of holding us over for some other time when we'll really be everything that we're meant to be. And if that's how you see yourself, yeah, basically I'm worthless, but God has kind of put this grace polish on my life so that I can be who I'm supposed to be someday. If that's how you see yourself, then you won't pursue change in the right way. The reality is that we're tarnished silver. We have inherent worth and value because we're made in the image of God. Sin has tarnished us, but God has rescued us in order to restore us to who we really are. You see, justification is God rescues us. Sanctification is he rescues us for the purpose of restoring us. And so grace could never be just an excuse for your life or a cover-up. Grace is a whole new life with God. This new life is characterized by obedience. And I say that because I want you to see that this principle has concrete effects, concrete implications in your life, and it is no longer do you obey sin, you obey God. But here's the thing, you can't focus on obedience. If you do that, you'll end up reducing it again to, or you reduce the law again to just external things. You'll settle for external conformity to the law. So you can't focus on obedience, but obedience is what happens in a life that's being transformed. In other words, grace isn't just about making incremental changes in your life. It's about transforming it altogether. And to do that, you've got to understand grace is a power. Look at verse 17. But thanks be to God. Either you're a slave to sin or you're a slave to God. Thanks be to God that those of you who were once slaves of sin have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed. This is a tricky little phrase here. We think of being committed as like something we do, but there's also a sense in like you could be committed to the hospital, right? It's the second sense that's at play here. In other words, it's not that I was obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching and then I became committed to God. I became committed to it. No. You were given over. You were committed to this standard of teaching, this new operating system. And because you were given over to it, it changed you and you began to obey it. Verse 18, having been set free from sin, you have become slaves of righteousness. Nearly all the verbs in here are being verbs and they're all in the past tense. Just say that so that you see. This is about something that's been done to you. This is what God has done to you and for you and in you through the power of the gospel. Look at it. You were once slaves to sin, but you have become obedient to the standard of teaching to which you were committed. So now, having been set free from sin, you have become slaves of righteousness. Grace was acting on you before you ever thought about grace. We were all locked up in the prison of sin, and Jesus came in, took our place in the cell, took our sentence, took our penalty and our guilt upon himself so that we might go free. And it's not a superficial freedom. You're not like some escaped convict and people are hunting you down. You're actually free. Jesus says it himself in John 8. He says, look, anyone who practices sin, who continues in sin, is a slave to sin. But if the Son sets you free, you are free indeed. And he doesn't mean you're free to just go about your own way and do whatever you want. He means you're free to live a whole new kind of life now. You're free to live unto God instead of unto sin. True freedom is not autonomy. True freedom is choosing the right master. True freedom is being given over to this standard of teaching, because this standard of teaching, the gospel truth, changes you. If you want to experience profound change in your life, submit yourself. Get under the word of God. Let it wash you. Let it enlighten you. Let it change your preferences and your tastes. Let it embolden and equip you. That's how change works. Much more on the power of grace in Romans 8. That's coming. But for now, I just wanted you to see that real change is beyond your means. It's beyond your natural ability. It requires a power from outside of yourself to invade your life. And that power is what Paul calls the grace of God. Now, here's the thing. Slavery is kind of a weird metaphor. It kind of breaks down because slavery to God doesn't actually feel like slavery. It feels great. God invades my life and changes everything about me. I'm now his slave, and I like that because I like him. I like everything about him. I want more of God, and that doesn't feel like slavery at all. And Paul admits this. Look at verse 19. He says, I'm speaking in human terms because of your natural limitations. He blames it on you and your lack of understanding. I got to use this metaphor even though it kind of breaks down because, you know, you're kind of slow. But he sticks with it. Look at the rest of the verse. For just as you once presented your members as slaves to impurity and lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, now present your members as slaves to righteousness, leading to sanctification. So he stays with the metaphor because it works. He's saying, look, God is changing you by this power, but it's a process. All right. It takes time. It takes your effort even. And so that's the last thing I want you to see, is that sanctification by grace is a process. Essentially what he's saying in verse 19 is, you've become slaves of righteousness, so now give yourself to righteousness. You belong to God, so give yourself to God. He's not saying, all right, get your act together and become a slave to God. That's already happened. You became a slave to God when you believed in Jesus. So this isn't a command to change who you are. It's a command to act like who you are. You've been given over to God, so now give yourself to God. And it's in this weird dynamic where we're supposed to do this thing that's already happened to us that we gain this really valuable insight about how change works, how spiritual change comes about in our lives. And here it is. It's that God changes us through a process that involves our participation. You have to do something. That's what it says. Present your members as slaves to righteousness. That's what leads to sanctification. In some way, Paul is saying sanctification has everything to do with you doing something. And is that grace? I mean, is that how we understand grace? Yeah, it's totally grace. Because grace isn't opposed, as I think Willard said this too, grace isn't opposed to effort. It's opposed to earning. Our new status and our new standing have already been earned for us. We're right with God because of the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus, and because we're united with him. We don't have to earn anything with God, but if we want to be changed under the grace of God, we do have to put forth effort. Just as you once presented your members as slaves to impurity and lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, now put forth the same kind of effort in the opposite direction. Present your members to righteousness, leading to sanctification. I want you to see, and we touched on this last week, I want you to see how physical sanctification is. His whole concept of it is that you would present the members of your body, your physical body, to God. Because that then becomes the means by which God changes us. Have you ever noticed you can feel the effects of sin in your body? I mean, isn't that kind of what anxiety and fear are? Not all the time, but sometimes. Isn't that what stress or being weary is just sometimes it's the effects of sin. You ever notice you can feel the effects of righteousness in your body? I mean, you do something good and you kind of stand up straight a little bit. Not because you're looking for praise from men, but you know, you just kind of stand up straight. Good deeds, righteousness affect our body in very positive. It brings wholeness and health to our bodies. Now, this is just part of the way sanctification works. So let me ask you a practical question. Have you ever consciously presented a member, a part of your body, to God in prayer? Like, have you ever said, okay, God, I give you my hands. I give you my eyes. I give you my ears, my feet, my stomach. Have you ever said anything like that? Does that sound weird? See, we tend to think that Christianity is about our soul and that the body is some secondary thing going on. But we're a united whole. God is restoring us, body and soul. And so if you never present the members of your body, if you disconnect your body from the process of sanctification, then you're going to be really frustrated. We do it all the time, though. We pray that God would make us patient, as if it's solely some internal reality. But you know what impatience looks like? You know, you can tell somebody's impatient by what they're doing with their body. Right? My body is not equipped and not ready to be patient. One time I wanted to be patient, I came across this kind of thinking. And so instead of just praying, God, make me internally patient, I started to try to train my body to be okay with being patient. And so every time I would go to a grocery store or any kind of store, I would intentionally find the longest line there was. And I would stand at the back of it and not look at my phone. Oh my gosh, my body could hardly stand it. But over time, I became the kind of person whose body was ready just to, like, be there. It's amazing when my body is ready to be patient, how much I notice it's going on around me. Just about what's going on in people's lives. How much more ready I am to act for righteousness because I've trained my body just to be patient. It's a very simple thing. Now, the thing about training is you have to keep it up, so I've gone back to the impatient person, but that's how it works. Douglas Moo says it this way. He says, our actions bind us to different powers and lead us to different results. The end game of sanctification is that the members of our bodies naturally do what is right. That doing good just sort of becomes second nature. That they've been so trained and made ready to do good that they do good. All right, so Paul says, it's just like when you were enslaved to sin. Sin had dominion over you, but you also participated in it. You gave yourself to it. And the more you gave yourself to it, the more it compounded. You know, when you sin, it makes it easier to sin in the same way, and it just compounds on itself. And he says righteousness, sanctification is the same way. You have to consciously present your members to righteousness. And the more you do it, the more accustomed to it they get. To the point where, you know, you used to sin, you didn't even think about it, but you'll get to the point where you do good, where you're patient when you're not even aware you're being patient. That's the vision of sanctification in our life. These babies that we had up here today, they are driven almost exclusively by their bodies, right? Hunger, comfort, stimulation, and they are establishing a kingdom in which they want some control. So they know that if I yell and scream long enough, someone's going to feed me, right? This is their kingdom. It's the realm in which they have say. And as they grow, they'll figure out a way to get more say over more things. The other thing that's going to happen as they grow is that they're going to encounter other people with their own kingdoms organized around their own desires. And that's when you're going to begin to see negative emotions surface in these sweet little babies. And so they will start throwing things at the other people with the other kingdoms, right? They will throw fits and tantrums. They will be at war with the kingdoms that oppose their bodily desires. And over time, as they develop, these desires, these habits, begin to settle into the parts of their body. And they can even take the form of just settled attitudes, resentment, bitterness, jealousy, impatience. All that stuff begins to sort of reside in our body, and our body is just naturally prone to act according to them. And for those babies to mature, their parents are going to have to train them and teach them to get, you know how many times I tell my kids, get control of your body? I mean, mostly it's for my own sanity, but it's because they need it in order to become mature adults. This is the end game of sanctification, that our bodies mature, that we naturally do what is good without even thinking about it. We've used this metaphor before. It's a metaphor of a sailboat, and I'll kind of use this to close us here. A sailboat works like this. I don't know if you've ever been sailing. It's one of those things that looks really calm and peaceful, but then you do it, and it's just really hard work. There's all kinds of terminology you don't know, and it takes all kinds of strength, and if you don't do it right, you're just not going anywhere. It doesn't matter how perfect the wind is. If you don't get the sail set straight, forget it. You're not going anywhere. On the other hand, you could do everything perfectly. You could be a master sailor, get all the sails set. If there's no wind, you're not going anywhere. This is how the cooperative process of sanctification works in our lives. We absolutely must have God at work. We must have the wind of His Spirit blowing through our lives if we're ever going to get anywhere. And so we've got to do the work of setting the sails, that is, training our bodies, putting ourselves under the truth of God's word so that it might prepare us and equip us and get us in the right position so that when the Spirit of God blows, we sail. God could be moving in all kinds of ways in your life, but if you are not prepared, if you are not setting the sails in your life in some way, you'll miss it. Some of us are so frustrated because we feel like God just isn't doing anything in our lives, and maybe it's that you're not doing anything. Now look, can God override all that? Can He do whatever He wants? Yes. I'm not putting God in a box. I'm not making sanctification totally contingent upon you. I'm just saying this is how God has designed things to work. He has just ordained it to work this way because he gets the most glory from it. And so we have to live according to that. And so when it comes to your body, three things. Don't neglect your body. Don't pretend like it doesn't matter. Train it. Conversely, don't idolize your body. Some of you, it's not the problem isn't that you neglect it, it's that you make too much of it. You're consumed with using your body to get comfort or pleasure or whatever outcomes you want. You've made the body the central thing in your life. Don't idolize it in that way. And finally, don't misuse it. Don't put your body in the wrong place at the wrong times. Don't do things with your body or subject your body to things that you know are unrighteous, because as you do that, you're training yourself for unrighteousness. You're acting like the person who's free, but they just continue to live as orphans or prisoners or slaves. And this is how things like fasting and Sabbath go from being keeping the law to gifts of grace. Because fasting is just a way to train my body to be more conscious of my need for God. And Sabbath is just a way to wean my body from its tendency to want to run the show, to attain, to achieve, to work hard, to secure myself by my own means. Sabbath says, I can just rest because I'm not in control anyway. God's in control. I have to rest to train myself for righteousness. And so if you want to change but you're tired, you're not tired because of grace, you're tired because of law. You're tired because you've been trying to change yourself from the outside in. And God's invitation to you and Paul's invitation in Romans 6 is to say, give yourself to grace. Don't get hyper-focused on managing your sin. Get hyper-focused on Christ and his grace toward you. Because as you live under grace, you begin to experience its sanctifying effects on you. Turn your eyes to Jesus. He's the one who faced everything that we face in bodily form, but without sin. He's the one who gave his body up to death so that we might have life. In our pursuit of holiness and change, constantly turning to Jesus. He's our hope in our life. God wants to change you more right now than you have ever thought about wanting to change yourself. Absolutely. He's not against you. He's for you. He's committed to it. He gave up his own son in order to do it. So let's give thanks to him.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.